All right. Well, I guess we'll just go ahead and get started. I'm Bob Piper, and with me is Kevin Bell. I'm a program manager, and Kevin is a test engineer, and we're on the Access team at Microsoft. And I guess we can probably start by going around the room if you all want to introduce yourselves.
I think there was 235 people registered, and I don't think we have 30.
Not quite, unless you're all schizophrenic. All right, so what we're going to talk about today is building an Access app and then managing it once you've built it, and that includes putting it in the Office Store. So for our session objectives today, we're going to learn how to build an app in 60 seconds and then put it in the corporate catalog or up in the store and learn how to manage it once it is there. So this means you'll be able to manage the full app lifecycle from the V1 through V2 and so forth. And we're introducing Access apps in the store. I don't know if you know, but we just took the preview flag off of Access recently, so within the last month, as a matter of fact. So this means that you can now submit your Access apps into the Office Store. Some key takeaways: you should remember that Access apps are SharePoint apps, and what we're most excited about, and kind of the heart of our session today, is that updates to Access apps can now be developed and tested outside of production and then applied at the time and the place of your choosing. And of course, also Access apps can be sold in the store. So here's our agenda. First, we'll build an app. Probably all of you went to Jeff's session yesterday on building a SharePoint app using Microsoft Access. How many of you went to that? All right, well, most of you, but so that it'll be a little bit of a rehash, but we'll show you some new exciting stuff that maybe Jeff didn't quite get to. And then we're going to create an upgrade and kind of show you some do's and don'ts about how to upgrade your Access app. And then we'll finish up with submitting an app to the store. And there is another session. You can get the content, everything you need to know about the Office Store. And you can get more questions answered there if we can't get to them. And while this is going, go ahead and open your second screen. And if you have questions that pop into your head, you can ask them in Yammer. Or actually, you can probably just interrupt us. All right, so here's the two sessions, one that I talked about a moment ago, Jeff and Chris's session, but there's a great session tomorrow at 5 all about extending your Access app using Apps for Office. And Apps for Office are an add-in that have been available for Excel and for Word, but now, as a matter of fact, as of last week or maybe early next week, you'll be able to put an App for Office inside your Access app and really extend the functionality of it. So please come to that session tomorrow. All right, so let's get right into a demo, and we'll begin by creating an app in 60 seconds. All right, so here we are, and we're looking at a SharePoint site contents page. And what we'd like to do is to add an app. So the entry point is simply...
You're on the wrong screen, sorry.
Oh, this one?
Minimize that.
All right, same entry point. So if you want to add an Access app, you'll click on Add an App. So then you get a list of all the possible apps you can add down here, and these are fed in either through your corporate catalog or maybe these are featured apps in the Office Store. But in this case, I'm going to do search for Access. So here's our Access entry point. I'm going to click this entry point, and the first thing we need to do is to name the app. Kevin and I are both car guys, so we thought with all those cool cars driving up and down the strip, we would create a Car Club app. It'll be Car Club V1, and I'm going to click Create. So what's going on after I click Create is that Access is provisioning a SQL database in the back end, and the SQL database holds all of your Access app info, both the system tables and the end user data tables. So here we are. Oh, and we're also adding the SharePoint app framework so that you are delivered a UI which leverages the power of SharePoint. Okay, so now almost instantly that app was created. Let's click on it and take a look. Huh, that's interesting.
Well,
perhaps Kevin should sign in.
Yeah, I should. Sorry about this.
We did make an appropriate sacrifice to the demo gods, so hopefully this will be the last of the glitches. All right, so here we are. This is our welcome page. And the reason that you don't see an Access app in progress right here and you don't get the client is because we have not yet created the schema and we have not yet added data into that SQL database. So it's an empty database and there's nothing to see. So what we want to do is open this app in the Access client and start adding tables. So the first thing I'll do is open it in the client. So here is the design surface in Access. And as you can see, the first thing that you should do is to add some tables to be containers for your data. Now we have a whole bunch of table templates, right around 100 table templates. So we hope that we've anticipated the kind of things people would like to track. In this case, we want to create a car club. So I'm going to do a search for club. And you can see that we've got a bunch of results. So I want our club to be a very exclusive club. I really like cool cars, and so, you know, if it's an expensive club to join, maybe that'll keep out the riffraff. Good idea?
Good call.
All right. So I'm going to choose dues, and now Access is going to create a couple of tables for me. Okay, so that's already done. You can see that Access has created two tables here on the left side in the list of tables. Oh.
We'll fix that. There you go.
Better? All right. So Access has created two tables. That's because Access is relational. And so for any one member, there are many dues. I'm going to rearrange the order of these tables so that members comes first. And now I'm going to go ahead and open this app in the browser by clicking Launch App. The thing to remember here is that the design time is in the client and the run time is always in the browser. So now we're opening up the browser. Here it is, live and in person. We've already created a usable, functional app with a polished and professional look. And as you can see, just like in the design surface, on the left side there's a list of tables. So you'll be able to choose your data. Across the top of the page are the different views you can choose from. So these are the different views of your data. This happens to be the list details view. So on the left side, there will be a list of records. And this will make a lot more sense once you see an app with some data in it. On the right side are all the details about the record you've chosen in the list. And then on the top, there is an action bar. So this enables create, read, update, and delete right out of the box with no code from you. So I'm going to go ahead and add a record. Speed Racer is a buddy of mine. Speed Racer, Racer. So I'm going to add him as my first member. I'll save this record. And now if we look at the other views, you'll see that that data has been added. Here's the data sheet view. This is the typical sort of a grid layout, like in Excel. And this particular table template also offers a summary view that is split up by group. So it's sort of like a pivot table. On the left side of the list, you see the group that that person is a member of. Speed Racer happens to be a business associate of mine, so he's under the business contacts. All right. So now, the more I look at this, Kevin, I'm not sure I want to charge dues. I mean, just look at the turnout here. I think if we charge dues, we'd have an even fewer people in our club.
You should remove that.
Yeah, all right. So I'm going to open this up in Access. I'm going to right-click over on the table list. And I'm going to delete this table. We do ask you to confirm that deletion in case there's any data in there. So now you can see that we're just left with the members table, but that's not all the customization I want. It's a car club, so I'm going to need to add some data about cars. So I'm going to open this table by double-clicking. And here's the table designer, and this will look familiar to anybody who's used Access in the past. Here's all the fields in that particular table, and I'm going to add some more. I'm going to add a field for car, which will just be a text field. And I'll add a car pick, because things almost always demo better with pictures. That'll be an image. And I'm going to add a member pick, which will also be an image. All right, so now I've changed this table, and I'm going to save it. And once the table is saved, I'm going to go back and look at the views that were created. So you saw the list view in the runtime where I added Speed Racer. Now if I open this up for editing in the client, you can see that Access has automatically added controls that represent those new fields that you've already added to your table. In this case, I'm going to do a little bit more customization. I'm going to delete these captions because it'll be self-evident what the pictures are. You can also resize your controls, and you can see that as you do a resize, the view changes size to go along with it. I can also move my controls, and as I move a control, the other controls get out of the way. And when I drop the control somewhere, you can see that it snaps to the underlying grid automatically, so I don't have to sit there and try to line up things perfectly. I'm also going to move the member pick up to the top. All right, great. So I think that's about all the polishing I will do for now. I think this looks great. I'm going to save this new view that I've customized. One thing to keep in mind that after you customize your view by moving controls around or changing the size of a control, we no longer will automatically add those new fields into your view. You're going to have to go over to the field list, which is on the right side, and you can simply drag and drop the control or the field right from the field list onto your view. So let's take a look at it in the browser and see how it looks now. Okay, so here we are looking at the list details view. You can see Speed Racer is there, and now there's room to add pictures of Speed Racer and his car. I'll go ahead and do that. All right. First, I'll add the car, then I'll add Speed Racer's picture. All right, save this record using my action bar. And now you'll soon be able to see that we have our updated app running in the browser with pictures added. All right, so now that this thing is polished and getting to a point where I really like it, I might want to share it out with other people in my organization. So the way to do that is I first must package up this app using the Access client. So I'll go back to the client once again. I'm going to go to File, Save As, and I'm going to save this app as a package. So this is going to package up all the details about this app, and then you'll be able to add it to the corporate catalog or even to the store. So this is Car Club V1. And I want to include sample data in this package. So this way, if I check that box, that Speed Racer record and those two images is going to be included in the package. That way, when a new user comes and takes that app from the corporate catalog and instantiates it, they'll be able to see that sample data and immediately know how the app works. It's everything. There is a size limit?
Yeah, so an app package is actually, I guess the question was for people listening, is there a size limit? And the app package can't be any more than 100 megabytes, but that 100 megabytes is compressed. So you should be able to get close to a gigabyte depending on the content.
Yes, exactly. It's a one-to-one relationship from the app to the SQL database behind it. All right, so we've packaged up the app. Now I'm going to add it to the app catalog. So here's our app catalog, and there's a slide later on I'll show you on how to get to the app catalog in Office 365. It's not immediately obvious how to get to the app catalog. You just have to append something onto the URL, which is in the slide later. Okay, well, so Access apps are SharePoint apps. So I'm going to click Apps for SharePoint. And this is nothing more complicated than the typical browse flow that you saw, for example, for the picture. So I clicked Add New App. I'll browse to that app. And there's Car Club V1. I'll put V1 in my comments. Okay. And here we get a chance to save a lot more metadata about this app. And a lot of this data is stuff that can be very valuable later on if you want to put the app in the store. Some of it's in fact required to put it in the store. But for now, I'm just going to save it as is because you don't need to have any additional metadata to put it in the store. So now you can see that the app is here in the store and ready for use. by Kevin. And now I'm going to switch back and show you the architecture overview of what we just did. All right. So first thing to remember is that the browser is always the runtime. The access client is always the design time. Access has its middle tier, including things like the access forms package. And then behind it all is a SQL database to contain all of your app data. So just to reiterate, the access client creates the HTML and the JavaScript. The web browser consumes it, and so you can have a runtime leveraging the power of SharePoint. And then behind it all is the SQL database. So an access table is a SQL table, and access data macros are SQL stored procedures and triggers. And one thing to remember that on-prem, we don't use SQL Azure. Instead, we use a SQL on-prem database. So just some highlights to cover. It's a powerful SQL backend. We use table templates to get you quickly up and running to create your app to track whatever you need. You get the instant, polished, and professional runtime that includes your default views, the ones you saw just a moment ago. You get built-in navigation and pop-ups, drill through, and you get create, read, update, and delete. These apps are easy to customize, and they're easy to share using SharePoint. This is the slide I was talking about on getting to the Office 365 corporate catalog. You simply append Sites app catalog onto the URL for your 365 site, and that'll get you to the app catalog. So with all that in mind, I'm going to have Kevin demo installing from the corporate catalog.
Sure. So the question is there any way to manipulate the JavaScript? And the answer is no, at least not that we're going to tell you. You might be able to do it, but we're not going to support it.
Right, it's not supported.
I don't believe so. Another question?
Sure.
Yeah. You should have a slide deck, but...
Yeah, you'll have access to the slide deck afterwards, but... It's not something you can just click to from Office 365, so I thought it would be valuable to have this here.
All right. I'm gonna flip over to... All right, so now that Bob has loaded this in the corporate catalog, I should be able to create an instance of this app. Now, Access apps are SharePoint apps, so I'm going to go ahead and create this the exact same way I would load any other app. So if I go to my site and go to Site Content, click on Add an App, I can see there's a version 1 of the Car Club. And I'll go ahead and trust it. And now you can see what it's going to do is it's going to go ahead and add an instance of that app. This is doing exactly what Bob did when he created an app new. The only difference is instead of getting a blank database, I should get a database that has all the information about Bob's app, including the sample data. So that just took a few seconds. Now that it's there, I can see what Bob's final version looked like. And you can see he's polished it up a bit. And me as a new user, I can immediately see that I can store an image about the member's car. I've got an image for the member, and I've got all the contact information. Now, who wants to watch me make typos for 15 minutes?
Anyone?
Nope.
No one?
Okay. So I'm going to switch over to this exact same app that I pre-populated with some data. So this is the identical app. I've got members in here. And you can see my car club's getting kind of popular. I've got 20 members or so. We give you the built-in navigation function in the list detail. As I click on a member, you can see the information in this content pane changes. Now, as my car club grows, I don't want to have to go hunt and peck, so we give you some built-in filtering. Let's say I want to look at what members have Cadillacs. If I type CA and hit return, you can see I return 3 records. Now, 2 of them clearly have Cadillacs, but Carrot Top has some sort of VW thing that I've never seen before, and it's clearly not a Cadillac. What's happening here is it's searching across all the fields, and CA matches the first 2 letters of Cadillac. So I can filter on a single field. In this case, I want to filter on the car field. If I put the name of the field and a colon, hit return, now you can see it'll filter on just those fields. So in addition, we need to be able to manage our data. Now you can see I've still got the Speed Racer sample record in here. And he's not really a member of my club. So I can easily delete this record by going in here, pressing delete, and confirming I want to delete the record. Now that record's gone. Now, while he's talking, I got a phone call from a guy named Jay, who apparently has a lot of free time on his hands now. He wants to join our car club. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new member. And I can do that just like Bob did. Now, he told me he's got an Eco Jet. His name was Jay, and he just sent me a few photos. One of his car. And one of him. I don't have all the information. I'm missing his last name. So I'm going to go ahead and call him on the phone and say, hey, Jay, you know, really glad you're joining our car club. You know, what was your last name again? Whoops. His last name is Leno. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, great. Well, you know, thanks for joining our car club. We'll let you know next time I have a rally. And he says, well, wait a minute. Don't you want to know about my other cars? Now, all of a sudden in my mind, little alarm bells go off, right? Because up until now, all my members have only had one car. So I'm thinking to myself, well, how can I handle this other data? Well, Bob gave me a notes field. So I could go in here and I could start adding data in the notes field. But that's not going to store the image. And it looks like he's got some cool cars. So I'd like to be able to capture those images as well. So I don't think that's going to work. So I guess what I can do is I can go in here and I could just create a J2 record. And then I'll go ahead and put the image. But the problem there is I'm going to have duplicate contact information. How am I going to know which one's right? Well, if he's only got two cars, maybe that's not a big deal. So I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, how many cars do you actually have, Jay? A couple, huh? A couple hundred? Well, clearly, that's not going to scale. So now this app that I thought was great, I'm not so sure about it anymore. I'm kind of getting a little discouraged. So, you know, maybe I should throw it out and start over. But, you know, I'm going to ask Bob if he can do something about that. So you got any ideas, Bob?
Actually, I do. So why create an upgrade? Well, obviously, there's several reasons. Here's just a few. God forbid you have a bug fix. I'm sure that never happens. But if it does, you might need to ship out an upgrade that corrects that bug fix. There could be app enhancements. Or, like in this case, there might be some feature requests. So now I'm going to demo creating V2. And this is actually quite timely, because right after the session ends, I'm actually going to go out into that casino, and I'm going to win that progressive slots. I've got my lucky dollar right in my wallet, and so I'm ready. And when I do, did you notice, Kevin, there's a Lamborghini dealership in this hotel?
I did.
Yeah, so I've already picked out three. I'm going to get a black and a orange and a red. And
this, well, skip the red.
Is that too much?
Pretentious.
Yeah. All right.
I'd skip that.
I'll just go with yellow.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Good. All right. So now let's take a look at my enhanced app, because it's not only Jay that's going to need to have several cars. It's also me and all my Lamborghinis. So looking at the app, now you can see that I've added a cars table in addition to the members table. So I'm going to click on the cars table and take a look at one of my favorite controls. So right here, you can see that we've got a hyperlink. And this is the single related items control. And what this does is it refers to other records and other tables that are related to this one. So in this case, we're looking at the many side of a one-to-many relationship. So in this case, the one is Speed Racer, the owner of this car. So I can click on this link and go right into that other table and see the person that this car is assigned to. Likewise, if I go to the members table, right underneath Speed Racer's picture, we have the related items control, and this one shows many records. So underneath, there's sort of a mini view of all the different associated records in the other table. In this case, there's only one, but I can drill through to the Mach 5. Or I can even add a car for Speed Racer. I'm going to add the Mach 6. And now when I go back to that record in the members table, I can see a little view into the cars table, all the cars that are assigned to Speed Racer. So now I'm thinking this is a pretty badass app, and I'm ready to share it out and put it in the corporate catalog. So I'm going to go back into the Access client, and I'm going to package this up much the same way I did before. So here we are opening the Access client, and again, I'm going to go up to File, Save As Package. All right, now this is V2, so I'm going to call it Car Club V2, very original name. And again, I really want to include the data in this package. And the reason I want to do that is that there could be plenty of users who come to the corporate catalog and download V2 first. And so they're going to want that sample data, so they will immediately know how to use this app. All right. So now I'm packaging up this app, and it'll go into the corporate catalog. And I know what I'm doing, so I've actually made some changes to that app package. And the fact is, we haven't actually shipped upgrade functionality. I'm thinking it's going to be probably another 3 weeks, or maybe 3 or 4 days. It's going to be out really soon, maybe by the end of this session.
Maybe.
We're going to ship out upgrade. But luckily, since I'm on the feature crew, I knew what to do. So I went into the version 1, and I opened up that app package, and I copied down the SQL app ID, I copied down the SharePoint app ID, and then I copied those numbers into the V2 app package, and I incremented the version number so that the next higher version would be the one that Kevin downloads and applies.
Switch.
Thought I was getting frisked.
Yes.
All right. So I'm standing right next to Kevin, but if I weren't here, how would he know that an upgrade was available? Well, we are a SharePoint app, as I've mentioned several times, so we utilize the same app upgrade notification that all other SharePoint apps use. So after some time, it can sometimes happen really quickly, and sometimes it's 4 to 6 hours, right on your site contents page, you'll get a notification that an upgrade is available. In this case, Kevin may have to click on About, and that is always going to be available. So when he clicks on that call out, he'll be able to see that an upgrade is available. All right, so with all that in mind, let's upgrade to version 2.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to my site content page. And you can see here's my version 1, and the upgrade notification hasn't shown up yet because we just installed this app like 5 minutes ago. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the Info tab, and then About. And you can see I got a version 2 here now, and it says Get It. So I'm going to go ahead and click that. And it says, do I want to trust the app? And
you tested this, right, Bob?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and trust it. So that's going out and applying the update.
I got this part.
Okay.
Yeah, let me take this. All right, so let me tell you exactly what's going on in the background. So because Access is built on top of SQL, we're able to utilize the data tier application framework that is supplied by SQL to take care of upgrades for us. So what happens under the covers is DAC first makes the SQL database read-only so that users can't interact with the database while the upgrade is taking place. Then DAC makes an exact copy of that SQL database and calls it a new name. You can see that little gear there. So what's going on inside there, I'll just do that again because it's really cool. Yeah. So while that's going on, DAC is making the schema changes, and it's putting in the new data that's coming in the new package, if there is any. If everything goes perfectly, that V1 database is deleted. So that's gone. And then the second database is renamed to match that first name. That way, the application and the SQL database behind it can be matched up together again. So now here's the anatomy of an upgrade, just to cover our bases. The one thing that I didn't talk about is that if there are any failures, DAC is going to go ahead and mark the V1 back to read-write, and it's just going to delete the V2 as if nothing had happened. So the upgrade's probably done by now, so let's switch back to the demo machine.
In fact, it is.
All right, perfect.
So now you can see I've got Car Club V2 sitting here. So obviously everything went okay, because if it failed, I should have been back on V1. So let's go ahead and see what Bob's new update looks like. Okay, well, this is different. I don't see the car image anymore. And if I click over here, I can see I've got a car tab that Bob said I'd have, but you know, I'm a little concerned. Like, I don't see my data here. I see that I can
add... It's a cool app, isn't it?
Well, maybe, but I can see that I can add cars, but I can't really do anything with this.
What do you mean?
Well,
you can do everything with it. You have a cars table now.
My data's gone, Bob. You tested this, right?
Oh, yeah, testing. I thought it would just work.
Yeah, no. So what did Bob do wrong? Well, Bob shipped out an application with data in it. And the way the SQL DAC pack works is it looks at every table in the database, and it says, oh, I've got data in my table, so my table is the most important table in the world. And what it does is it drops the user table and replaces that. Now, this is probably not going to be too popular with your users when you start dropping their data. Now, it's going to do this even if there's no schema changes. So if the tables are identical and you ship out one record, it drops it and re-adds it. We affectionately call this rip and replace.
Oh, rip and replace. Yes.
Damn it.
So that's the problem. So what I want to show you now is a couple new features that we're working on that are going to actually let us safely create an upgrade package. So with that, let me flip over to an app that I created. This is the Car Club V2 again. It's the exact same app. The only thing I've done is I've added some enhancements to make sure the package can deploy and not eat the user's data. So I'm going to go open the app up in Access just like we did before. And the first thing you might notice up here is I have a sample data table. Right? So we didn't have that in Bob's app. And this is how we're going to actually deploy things and not trash the user's data. So the first feature we added is the ability to lock a table. And locking a table is really easy to do. I just simply go to the table and right-click, and I'll have a lock option, which I can click on, and you see it added a lock icon here, and I can toggle that on and off. Now, locking does two things. One, it's going to make that table read-only, and that's read-only for everybody. So even the app author is going to put it in a read-only mode for themselves. Fortunately, they can go in design mode and toggle that back and forth. The second thing it's going to do is it's going to act as a flag. Now, that flag gets used when we create the package, which we'll talk about in a second. And basically, it applies a rule. It says, if a table's locked, then I'm going to include all the data. If it's not locked, I never include any data. So by setting things up this way, we can basically ship out the members table and the car table empty, but we can put our sample data in kind of a protected space in the sample data table. Excuse me. So the other thing I wanted to point out is that we've decided to hide this table. The user is going to have no interaction with this table, so we can hide it. We don't have to hide the table, and in fact, you can actually update table in a read-only mode, but you have to do it through a data macro. The caveat there is if you go ahead and write a macro that updates a record and then ship out again, you're going to overwrite whatever values you wrote in there with the data macro. So that's our first new feature. Now, this doesn't do much good, having a record in a table that the user can't see and can't edit. You had a question?
It should become clear
shortly. Wait 2 minutes or 3 minutes. It should. Well, we'll keep going. So the second new feature we added is basically a way to get that data out of that protected table into the user's table. So what we've created is something we call the on-deploy data macro, or we affectionately call it the ODDM for short. And it's a special kind of data macro that actually runs anytime the app is installed, which should only be once, and anytime the app is upgraded, which could be multiple times. Now, to go ahead and do the ODDM, all I have to do is go to Advanced and click on the On Deploy. Now, if people here have built Access apps in the past, this is very similar to the On Start macro, which is a UI macro that runs anytime your app is loaded or anytime the user hits an F5 and refreshes. The difference here is this runs, again, as a data macro. And it's the same as any other data macro with two small exceptions. One, it cannot take input parameters. And two, it cannot return variables at the end, which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because this is running kind of outside the space of the app. There's no user interaction at all. It's happening behind the scenes on the install of the upgrade. So this is a very simple data macro here. And what I'm doing is I'm actually calling two other data macros. I can call other data macros. I cannot call a UI macro, because a UI macro could do something like open up a form, which doesn't make any sense. In addition, I can actually call the on-deploy data macro from a UI macro or another data macro, but that would then be running that code again, so you need to make sure that's really what your intended purpose is. So let's look at what these macros do. The first macro is going to go ahead and insert sample data. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and look at the members table. And if there's any records in the members table, I'm going to go ahead and stop the macro, because I don't want to overwrite or want to add a member that's already there. Assuming there is no data, it goes ahead and looks at that hidden sample data table, and it says, okay, for every record in there, go ahead and create a record in the members table. And it simply does that by saying, okay, get the data from the sample data. In this case, we're going to look at the last name, and stick that in the member's last name field. So it does that for those three values. And then it says, okay, go ahead and grab the member ID from that newly created value. It then takes that and goes to create a record in the car table. So it does basically the same thing here. Now what we've done is we've taken a flat file and we've created a relational database out of it. We've put one record in the member table, we've put a related record in the car table. Now the migrate macro is very similar. It's going to look at the car table and it's going to say, you know, if there's something in there, stop the macro because it's already been updated or the user's already figured out how to use it. If it's empty, it's going to go look at every record in the member table and it's going to go ahead and iterate on it and say, take that record from the members table and go ahead and stick it in that new car table. In this case, we already have the member ID, so we just have to put that in there. But we want to clear out that value, right? We don't want to have the car information stored in multiple places. So I can go in here and I can set the field to null, which basically clears it out. So that's what my macros are going to do, and we'll see how that works in just a second. Now the next feature we added is a way to package things up. Now Bob talked about, and you actually saw him go in here and click an option that said save as package. Well, now we have three different package types. So we basically took the existing one and we said, let's call that save as new. And that's going to work exactly like Bob showed you, where you give it a title and you go ahead and give it the option to include data. Now behind the scenes, what's happening is we always set that macro to version one, or sorry, the app to version one. And then we go in and get the app ID as a random GUID. So if I were to run this like 30 seconds apart and create two packages, I would think I have two packages of the exact same app. But when I install them on SharePoint, it's got two different app IDs, so it thinks it's two different apps. So this is where Bob had to go crack in there and go massage the GUIDs. Now the first new one we created was Save as Snapshot. And in here, we pull the last known title and display that for you. I could change it. I could say it's a backup from March, or it's I want to create version 3. And here, we looked at the lock status of a table, and we basically ignore it. We take every single piece of data in every single table and write it out to the package. So this is basically a backup. And the backup is good for, let's say I've got version 2, and now I want to create a version 3, but I don't know how long it's going to take me to create version 3, and I might have to support version 2. I can take that package, I can install it in a different subsite, and then I can basically have two different versions going. And they can both be upgraded because they're the same version ID. It's also good for testing.
Isn't that right, Bob?
Yeah.
If Bob had tested this and applied this, he would have seen that he was overwriting the data. Now the third and probably the most exciting one is the save as deployment. Here we let you go ahead and set that same title and the version and a lock status for the app, which I'll talk about in just a second. Every time you successfully create a package, we update those three values. So if I were to create version 3, I'd change the values, I would save the package, I would come back in, and it would say, oh, the last version you created was version 3. And then finally, we apply the rule to the lock tables. And this gives you the description here, basically saying if any table is locked, we include all the data. If it's not, include a blank table. Now, the locking we talked about is different than locking a table in that T-shirt cannons. You know, we said we never want to delete user data, but we also don't want to delete user changes. And the way an app works today, if the user has, you know, kind of admin rights, they can go to that gear, they can open up that application, and they can make a simple change. It could be simple as just taking a field and dragging it one place or resizing it one place. As soon as they save that, we mark that app as been edited. And part of that, of looking as edited, we look at it and we say, okay, if it's an edited app, we can't do an upgrade on it. So anytime an app is edited, we're going to block doing the upgrade. Now, as we're going to talk about a little bit, you can put your app in the store, Another reason you might want to lock an app is you don't want to have an end user who has rights to that app go in, take your app, basically get all your intellectual property, repackage it as their own, and put it in the store for half price or, you know, $1.50 or whatever the lowest price is. Now, there's a couple drawbacks with locking an app. The first is we basically block the entry points for all this packaging stuff. So it's kind of hard to create a backup for this package. We also lock the ability to turn on the external data. If you guys went to Jeff's session, Jeff and Chris talked about being able to go in there, turn on the external connection to a database, and then use that with Excel or Access client or whatever. So those are going to go away. Now, I don't know how big of a deal that is. I consulted for 15 years using that, and I think it's a great functionality. Most of the stuff I did was SQL Server. So for me, that's a great stepping stone. You can load your app in there. You can still use your client database. How that scales to somebody in the store, I'm not really sure yet. But just be aware, there are some drawbacks when you lock your app. So that's kind of a quick overview. I want to jump back to the slide deck and just give you a quick recap of what we talked about here. You know, they say that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And I think that's probably good, except for slide content and stuff like that. You want to remember what's happening. So I'm just going to go through these real quick. This is more for the 200 people that didn't show up. So locking a table, basically, we talked, you know, what it does is it makes the table read-only, blah, 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 blah. I've got the how to lock a table here. Whoops, I've gone too fast. We're just not keeping up. Basically, just go there, right-click on the table. You can toggle between lock and unlocked. We talked about the on-deploy data macro. The one thing I want to call out here is you are responsible for creating the logic on how your app works. So in my case, I chose just to look at the status of a table being empty or not empty. And in my case, it was pretty simple, right? If it's empty, I can assume we can do something. If it's not, we don't want to do anything. You may need to track some kind of internal version number to say, oh, this is the version I'm on. This is the version I want to go to. I need to run these steps. That's kind of up to the app author. Again, the entry point is pretty simple. You basically go to the ribbon in advanced. And then we talked about creating packages. I won't go over this. There's some screenshots here just to get you an idea of what it is. Here's the options that you have. And then locking an app. You know, I've kind of gone back and forth. When do you want to lock an app? When don't you want to lock an app? I think for me, what I've decided in my mind is if I'm installing to a corporate catalog or the store, I have to assume that multiple instances of that app are going to be installed, and that's not going to scale very well. You know, I don't want to go to hundreds or thousands of users and have to walk them through a manual process of doing it. So I think if you're installing to a large group, you probably want to lock your app kind of by default. If you're installing to like a one-off, which most of this consulting I did was one-off, and I would give them the source code anyways, I think you can go ahead and leave your app unlocked. So what's going to happen if you go in, give an app to somebody that's locked, they go make a change, or maybe you go make some small tweak in the live system. Well, now that app can't be upgraded. Fortunately, you can use the snapshot option. Go ahead and create a snapshot, install it in a different site, or delete the existing app and install it there. Anytime you install an app, we go ahead and reset that flag that says it's been edited. So now you can apply any update you want. And that's a good segue into what I want to talk about next, which is sideloading an update. So let me flip back over to the machine, if you would, Bob. And I think this is what I want. Yeah, so I've got a blank site right here. And you remember when Bob created the new app? He went in here, clicked on Add an App, he added it, and it popped up this dialog. And he gave it a name. Well, there's another option down here that allows you to sideload an update.
Sideload a new app.
Sideload a new app, sorry. So I'm going to click here and browse. Now, it's not that I didn't trust Bob, but I went ahead and took my father's advice. He said never trust anybody that spells their name forward and backward the same. So what I've got is an exact copy of that application that I made before we applied the first update. So I'm going to go ahead and install that. And with any luck, we can go look at our app here. And you can see I've still got all my data. And if I look down here, there is no speed racer. I've already taken care of that record. And we can see there's Jay Leno here. So just to show you that there's no Vegas magic going on, somebody give me a roulette wheel number. 22. Deafening from the crowd. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and save this as the EcoJet 22 just to show you that I've made a custom change to this record. So now I'm going to go ahead and go back to my site. And you can see I've got a new app here. Now, even though I've got a version 2 in the catalog that matches this, it lives kind of in a different, kind of a totally different space. So if I load an app from a catalog or from the store, I can only upgrade it from the catalog or the store. In this case, I sideloaded an app, so I can only get that app updated through sideloading. So Bob's going to have to tell me, hey, here's an update, go apply it. So very similar how we updated the first app, I click here, and you can see the about has gone away, and I have a new upgrade. I'm going to go ahead and click on this. It pops up a dialog. Now I'm going to go ahead and browse to an app. Now this time I'm going to fat finger, and I'm actually going to select the wrong app. I go ahead and hit apply. And it says, sorry, something went wrong. And basically it's telling me I can only install a package that has an app ID that's the same. In this case, it failed because it was different. In addition, I have to have a version number that's greater than the app. So basically, I can't install a different app on top of my app, and I can't install an older app. So let's go back here. And this time, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to correct the right package, and hit apply. And that's going to go ahead and churn in the background. And what it's doing is it's doing all the same steps with the DAC pack, massaging the data. When that's complete, it runs an ODDM, which is our on-deploy data macro, and it's going to go ahead and look at the tables, and it says, oh, the member table has members in it. Don't do anything. The second data macro it's going to hit is the migrate one. And in that case, we just created that table of cars, so it's going to be empty. So it's basically going to walk through each member, and it's going to move the data from the member table to the car table. So now this is done. We have to keep our fingers crossed because this is actually brand new code. And I think there's probably 5 people in Microsoft that have seen this.
Now there's 10.
10.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's just outside of Microsoft. So you guys are the first to see this. I'm going to go ahead and click on it. Okay, the good news is all my data is still there. And I can see Bob's got a new car table, which is cool. I can kind of now browse by cars and I can see the car images. And if we go to the members table, I can see it didn't go ahead and add Speed Racer back in. And if we pick J, you can see it's still the EcoJet 22. So now finally, after all this, I can click Add Cars, and I can add another car for J. We'll add a Blastolin.
It's a Blastolin, actually.
A Blastolin.
Get it right.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. I'm not really a car guy. We'll add this. We'll go ahead and save the record. And you can see we added a second car for Jay, and sure enough, we've got multiple records in there now.
Yeah,
sure.
Cool, right?
You can. There you go.
That's got a Spitfire engine in it.
That's pretty cool. He does.
Yeah, he's got another 198.
Everybody can come up and add one at the end. It won't take that long. So let's flip back over. So just to recap, why is sideloading important? Well, it basically bypasses the catalog and the store. And again, we have 2 distinct paths for creating an app, and you can't cross. So yeah, I can't take an app from the store and upgrade it by sideloading. And then to sideload, basically click on the more information and hit the update. Now, what you need to get these new features? Well, you're going to have to need SP1 of the Office 2013 client.
Which is out right now.
Which has just shipped, I think, about 2 weeks ago. You also have to have an upgraded 365 server. We're deploying this feature dark, meaning it's rolling out turned off, and as we validate things, we'll be turning it back on. Now, Bob's a PM, and he's an optimist, and he thinks it's going to be on this afternoon. I'm a tester. My job's to break things. So I'm a little more cautious, and I think it's probably going to be another month or two.
Just ship it.
But it'll be coming. So what you're going to need is that SP client and an upgraded 365 server. We don't have any plans to ship this to on-prem in Service Pack 1. You're going to have to wait for the next full release of SharePoint. And you must connect from that SP1 client. So, for example, if you've got an updated server, but you're connecting with an old client, you won't see it. Or if you've got a new client connecting to an on-prem server or a server where it's dark, you won't see that functionality. But what these things are going to do is they're going to allow us to basically test and deploy applications that we can update in the corporate catalog, or maybe we want to monetize this and we can put it in the store, which is what Bob's going to talk about next.
All right. So how many of you went to everything you need to know about the Office Store? Nobody.
One.
Okay, you were behind the speaker there. Well, the content is all there. And just to reiterate, Access apps are SharePoint apps. And so the way to put an Access app in the store is exactly the same path that you follow to put any other SharePoint app in the store. So first, I'll cover a little bit of an overview. So in the store right now, well, as of last week at least, there were 576 apps available. Hopefully after this, there'll be 1,000 or so. It should grow exponentially after this. And we keep adding languages. Over one-third of the apps that are in the store right now are paid. And the next few slides, I had some actual numbers in here, but marketing redacted them before my slide deck got to this demo machine. But we are allowed to talk about momentum. So the momentum is really good. And as you heard in the keynote address, Office 365 is Microsoft's fastest growing commercial product ever. That's actually a very significant statement when you think about all the things we've ever shipped. The store visitors each month, I can't give you the exact number, but I can say that there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of visitors every single month to the store. And in the 1 year, actually slightly less than a year, that the Office store doors have been open, many, many, many millions of downloads have taken place. So that should make it obvious why you want to put your apps in the store. But let's drill down a little bit into monetization and exposure. First, monetization. This is not complicated. This simply means you charge for the app and you get money at the end. So Microsoft gets 20% off the top and the developer gets the rest after the taxes are removed. The minimum paid app price is $1.50. So depending on where you live and so forth, what the taxes look like, you're going to get a little over a dollar. The maximum app price is $999. So in the case, in this case of Access apps, I've made it so that if you put an Access app in the store, I get the 20%, which 20% of 999 should just about buy one tire for my Lamborghini. So let's talk a little bit about subscriptions and try and buy. These are a couple of features that are available for SharePoint apps. Now, subscriptions don't really make sense in the Access world, and that's because although I could put it in the store and price it as a subscription, let's say I sell it to Kevin and he's paying me $5 a month or something, it doesn't matter whether it's just Kevin using that app or whether Kevin has shared it with 500 of his closest friends and they're all using the app, I still only get $5 a month. So you're much better off just charging what you want for the app and being done. Same thing with the try and buy. We have not enabled the try and buy scenario in the case of Access. However, something I did learn last week is that you can put ads in your apps. Now, they can't be big, obnoxious ads, and your app has to do something more than simply open to an advertisement. So that wouldn't make it into the store past the screening process. But it can contain subtle ads as long as your app is fully functional and useful. So a couple of things that just popped into my head off the top of my head were two scenarios. One is maybe you're an app developer for a business. So you might want to put a simple app in the store and maybe make it locked or unlocked either way, but then have an about page in your app that says who you are and that your services are available if that end user wants to customize their app using your services. Another thing that could be useful is if you're building the app for a third party. Maybe you are an app developer and you're building an app for, or you're going to work for, say, a car dealer, and you can also offer them, well, hey, maybe you might want to sponsor an app in the Office Store. I can build that for you and put an ad for your car dealership right into that app. So here I've created a couple of examples of what this might look like. Now, these are quite ugly examples, but I did, in fact, run them by the policy folks in the store, and these are exactly the kind of thing that you can do. So I got buy-off on these, despite their lack of great beauty. So here is an about page in that car app. It just simply says a little bit about who I am, and that if the end user wants to have the app customized, they can call me. And here is the car app with just a little footer at the bottom on the cars table in the list view, showing that users can go ahead and buy their next car at Bob and Kevin's Exotic Auto House. So what's the process of getting your app into the store? Well, it's exactly the same as any other SharePoint app, so I'm not going to demo it. It's really quite simple. You can just follow these steps. And once you're certified as a seller, you can add your app to the store. So before you go ahead and try to add your app to the store, it's best to gather this list of items just to make things run smoothly. So obviously the app package has to be there. There has to be an icon, and the icon is what shows up both in the store and also in the site contents page when the end users pull down the app. There have to be support and privacy links, some descriptions to talk about your app. These are also ways to help the end users decide whether or not to buy your app. And then at least one screenshot. Once you have all that data gathered, go to the seller dashboard and click the big blue button, and that's really all there is to it for adding your app to the store. One thing I would like to call out is the metrics tab here. After you've added an app into the seller dashboard and it's in the store, we keep track of the metrics. So how many people have downloaded your app and how many hits has it gotten? So this is a really nice feature, and it also includes a graphical representation of all the interaction that your app has seen. So in review of our session today, you guys learned how to build an Access app and how to manage it once it's built, wherever it happens to be, whether that's the site contents or in the app catalog or even in the store. Some key takeaways, again, Access apps are SharePoint apps, and updates to Access apps can now be developed and tested outside of production, and Access apps can now be added to the store. So make sure to come visit us at the Access booth in the Expo Center, and make sure you grade our session. And also, I guess apparently there was some problem with the badge reader.
I think they fixed it and came around and scanned the badge. So
oh, okay.
You can ignore that now.
Never mind. So anyway, please evaluate our session if you get a chance. And thank you all very much for coming.
We have swag.
Oh, yeah.
If you ask a question, come up and get a T-shirt.
Or
if there's other questions, come up.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, let's.
The search feature you showed search within your app. Is that also included in the search center? Can I include the results?
No,
it's just inside the Access app.
Enterprise search?
No, so that's actually searching the database, so it's not going to show up in the SharePoint feature. Not today. It may someday, but right now, no.
A lot of people have asked for that. It's on our backlog.
From a T-shirt.
We should need the T-shirt cannon.
So we have T-shirt, we have a hacky sack. T-shirt. Do we have different sizes, or?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you can come get a T-shirt. I'm not sure what sizes we have, but we'll take the next question. Let's see. Can you go to the microphone so we can record? Let's see.
Sorry. So I have a few questions. But
XL?
The main question is about permissions on the Access app.
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Oh, permissions in the Access app?
Permissions. Yeah.
Yes, we inherit the permissions from the SharePoint site.
So there's no way right now to like limit who can create or add or who can view certain tables or anything like that?
Not right now, no. But that's, again, something that's on our backlog. A lot of people have asked for it. So there would be a different I'm guessing that you'd like different interactions depending on the person's permission level. That's something we're working on.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I have a question.
Come get a T-shirt if you'd like one. Sorry.
I have a question regarding migration. Would it be possible to migrate a current existing MS Access 2010 up to
Yes, you certainly can. So in the, we can actually demo that if you want. We have time. But so when you're adding a table, one of the choices at the bottom is to migrate data from an existing Access app right into a table.
Okay, and does it have to be a certain format? So can it be Access 2003, or does it have to be some minimal version at least?
You can create the data connection that Kevin was mentioning and Jeff talked about in his session, so that you can have both an Access client and a Office 2013 web app, both talking to the same SQL database in the back end.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Hi, two quick questions. First, when this is released, where should we be looking for an announcement saying it was released?
Team blog.
The team blog the is team the best blog. Place, yeah. But we can email you directly.
we'll put something out on the blog.
Okay, and in terms of documentation, I assume there will be a link on the blog for documentation.
I don't have a good documentation answer.
I know they're working on it. Our customer support team has been writing drafts of it. So it'll go out. There'll probably be a knowledge base article on how to.
Okay.
Or something along those lines. But yeah, we'll include a link to that.
And I
yeah.
actually have a third question. And that was the sample data table. There's nothing special about the name sample data, right? That's
no,
just
no,
what
no.
you arbitrarily
You could call it anything you wanted.
And in your example, the sample data, could you bring up the sample data table?
Sure.
So in your case, the sample data contained what?
So let me, it's disappointing. Oh, that's the wrong app. I need to switch back over to this one here. Basically, it had, I think, three fields. I got to find the right one. This is the one here, I believe. Sorry, let me back up and make sure I'm in the right. Yeah, this is the dev one. So basically, there's three text fields and two images.
So okay.
The easiest way to see that is to go into design here. And you can see I've got a first name, a last name, and a car, which are all just text fields. And then I put two image fields in. Now, if I just wanted to put sample data in there and I didn't want to have images, I could have simply created the data macro that said, put in this value, and I wouldn't have to go loop through a table.
Okay.
But because I want an image, that's the only way I can guarantee that an image is going to go in is by putting it in a table. And this also scales a lot better. Let's say you wanted to put in 100 sample records.
Right.
You could load 100 sample records at a table rather than having to go, you know, line after line after line.
Really, where I'm driving is, can I have multiple sample data tables?
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely. I just lock them and, okay. Thank
yep.
you very much.
Yeah.
So regarding documentation, I guess I was confused. I thought you were talking about we have to document for the EU, sort of, but the actual help documentation will be available as soon as the feature ships.
We have a large or an extra large?
Extra large.
Next question.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
We got hacky sack.
We heard the question that you couldn't inject some kind of script or anything in there. I was just wondering, when we look at the UI for a form, it's very lightweight, it's very something, and I would want to create an app and perhaps want to just style some of the fields with a background or something. So would the same thing go for CSS, or is there any way that you think that you could inject a CSS on top of this for the web form?
The only thing you can really change is the color, and so we inherit the SharePoint themes.
I understand that with the themes, but I kind of want to do something special, but there's no way of doing CSS. I understand it with the scripts,
no.
but...
No, there isn't.
Okay.
Not right
now. Consider
that
as a feature request?
Sure. We have a backlog.
We'll consider anything. Okay, where it's going to fall, we don't know.
Okay, that's cool. Thanks.
App parts aren't really part of Access.
Yeah, we don't use app. We can use apps for Office. So apps for Office, you can do effectively whatever you want, but it won't change any of the app for Office is actually kind of stuck in a thing. Did you want a large? We have a large T-shirt or a hacky sack?
Yeah,
large T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
no problem,
I have the same UI question. And maybe another question is that can we leverage the SharePoint UI design, for example, the X portal? Or maybe it's... The current apps for SharePoint or the current apps for Office UI design?
So Access apps are all SharePoint apps, so they would all be in the apps for SharePoint category inside the Office store.
Okay.
If you come to Gary's session, you'll be able to see that you can also now put apps for Office inside an Access app. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Sort of, yeah.
Yes, okay, great. Anybody else?
Hacky sack? I'm good at throwing, watch.
Oop.
Look at that. Any other questions? I got three hacky. Oh, wait, another one. You just want a hacky sack, don't you?
Yeah, that's fine.
What's your favorite color?
No,
red.
Can I directly access the SQL database behind the app?
It's a one-to-one relationship between the access app.
So you can
app.
Do whatever you want with that database.
Yeah.
Yep, you can get the data out of there. So, you can use SSMS.
I'll show
you.
Jeff actually showed this in his demo. But basically, when you create an app, we provision a SQL database. But let's say you want to go create a reporting database on it, or you want to go link to Excel. All you have to do is go in to the connection here. And because I'm I guess I should have fessed up to this. This is actually a server running on this laptop because it's got pre-production bits. So I'm not running on SQL Azure right now. If I was running on SQL Azure, what I would see is a flag that says turn on the firewall, and I get two options. Turn on for just my location, which is whatever your gateway's IP address is, or turn on for all locations. Because this is an on-prem server, I can skip that step. But I go in here, and I can say enable read-write connections, and it kind of lights up. And then I can say view the read-write connections, and that gives me all the connection information. So now I can create an ODBC connection or whatever kind of data connection I want to that server with that username and that password. Is that what you're asking? Or no?
Can you pre-deploy your own database and then
no.
add?
So,
yeah.
Oh,
you
you're asking if you have a SQL database full of data already, can you put an Access app on top of it? You can't do that.
Today, no.
Yeah.
Right.
Right now, we support one kind of external data connection, and that's a SharePoint list. So if you've got a list on a server, you can go link to that, and you'll see the live data. It's going to be read-only, so you can't edit in the Access app. We've got a lot of requests for people saying, well, you know, I've got a list of departments, or I've got a list of something in an external app. I just want to surface that in there. So that's one of the things we're exploring is how do we let other data sources come in. You'd still probably have to create the app because we store all the forms, all the views, all the like the data macros actually create Transact SQL, but we store that representation so you don't have to know Transact SQL. You just write very simple kind of logic statements. When you save that, we actually generate the scripts for SQL Server. So the app will always have a database. It just depends on at what level. Hacky sack?
Do I get another one?
No. Did you want a hacky sack? Can you catch? I told you, I'm good.
Perfect.
Active Directory integration. So if I want to pull people names and that sort of thing, that's not there now. Is that something that you're working on?
Gary's nodding. I think we can say yes.
Yeah.
All right. So that so the use case might so I would have a people picker like I do natively in SharePoint, right?
Yeah.
And along with that, I would be able to pull other attributes, phone numbers, et cetera.
Well, did you go to the InfoPath session this morning? We talked a little bit about Office 365 objects. So we're hoping to be able to integrate everything about all
of them. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting, right, because it is online. But if there were other attributes available, I would be able to pull those in. Or at least that's what the plan is.
That's the plan, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
You bet.
When you were doing the second version,
yep,
you were doing something in the macros to protect your database. I wasn't quite sure what it was. I just want to make sure I understand it right.
Yeah. So,
macros move data around the app from one place to another.
So in my macro here, so for example, the migrate. What I'm doing is I'm basically saying go look up a record in the cars table, which if I'm going to run the data macro. I want to make sure that cars table is empty. Because either one of two things happen. One, it's a brand new database that, you know, I installed version 2 for the first time, and so it's everything's empty. So the data macro would have fired first to insert the sample data, and so there'd be a record in the car table. I don't have to do anything. Or the app has already been migrated. Maybe I'm installing version 3. And so version 3 already has car data in there. You have to assume that that's already run. So anytime there's a record in there, I'm going to stop. Now, I could have gone in and said, walk each record all the time and go look to see if the car data is there. And if it isn't, go add it. But in my case, I could pretty much do a blanket statement. So that's the little trick here. As I say, do a lookup. And then if it returns any kind of data, it's going to execute what's in here, which will basically say stop the macro. So nothing below that will execute.
Okay. And that was, did you develop that as the consumer of the app or as the developer of it?
This would be as the developer or the author of the app.
Okay.
The consumer should never actually see the access client. They're just going to see the browser interface. Like Bob was saying, that our runtime is basically in the browser.
Right, so the end user would never see that unless they opened it in the access client.
So there's three things that you showed. One is to you can either lock the table or leave it unlocked.
Yep.
In which case it would get overwritten with whatever was already there. Or you can do this macro thing to try to intelligently...
Well, the two things are closely related.
They kind of overlap.
Yeah.
So the reason that you would lock a table is that all of the data you want preserved as the app author. So when that lock table goes out and the new package gets applied, the new data is going to just run over the old data. If you are creating your app and you don't lock a table, but let's say while you're creating the app, you have a whole bunch of data in there to just kind of test and make sure everything's working well, you don't want to include that as sample data, so you don't lock the table. So what happens is that one of the packaging options you have, when you package it for deployment, any table that isn't locked, we just dump the data so that when that new package gets applied to any app instance that is out there, there's no risk of running over the end user's data.
So you package it without data?
Yes.
But the migrator knows to keep the data in the locked tables? Is that?
Well, the migrator doesn't have anything to do with the locked tables. So the macro that Kevin wrote took the data that was in that locked table. So the app gets deployed. Okay. And then the on-deploy data macro runs and moves that data from that sample data table to the different places around the app.
So when you packaged it, there was an option to include the data or not, right? No?
Okay, well, there's three different packaging.
Okay.
So you can package it as a new app and then choose to include the data or not.
Yeah.
You could package it as a snapshot, which includes absolutely everything. So the version number is copied, the GUIDs are copied, all of the data in the app is copied, and you don't get the option to keep or throw away data.
Do you have that screen?
Sure.
Yeah.
You can just look in the client too.
Yeah, and this client here is updated, so those are the three options. And which one do you want to see?
So say it is new app, snapshot, or?
Deployment. So deployment is where we're actually going to go look at that locked flag on the table, and we're going to say include the data or don't include the data. It's an either or. If it's locked, we always include the data. If it's unlocked, we never include the data. As opposed to the snapshot, where we take all the data from all the tables. That's basically a backup or a point-in-time snapshot of your data.
So which scenario does it matter if you lock your table, individual table?
Just this one.
The deployment.
This is where it looks at the flag.
So if it's unlocked, but you locked your table, it'll keep the data?
So you're talking about locking the app?
So that's a lock button right there, right?
Yeah, well, this locks the app.
That locks the app, right.
And that's independent of locking a table.
I see. So the locked table matters once it arrives.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thanks.
You bet.
I just wanted to mention that if you don't have images and you want sample data, it's very simple just to have a macro that when it starts up, it looks and says, are these tables empty? And if they are, then you can just hard code in your macro some sample table. That way your upgrade is a lot easier. You don't have to do a lot of these things. So there's other ways. He's showing you like the hardest scenario, you know, with tables and image and thing. But
Kevin likes to be fancy. So.
I like images.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks
so
a lot, guys.
We'll hang out if you got any other questions. We'll go ahead and let them shut the mics down. Yay, thank you. We got one hacky sack left. Who didn't get a hacky sack? That really wants a hacky sack. I guess everybody got a hacky sack.